Welcome to the Nations Church podcast. We hope this message blesses you.
Who's ready for the preaching of the word today? Yes. So good. I pray that today's message will lift your heart, draw you deeper, bring you to a greater revelation of your need for Jesus. How many of you know that we need to be reminded of how much we need Jesus? Yes. Jesus teaches us how to pray in Matthew chapter 6. So many layers to this model of a prayer that Jesus teaches us. But I want to take you to the front half of this prayer to launch our thought today. Matthew 6, verse 7, Jesus says this, "And when you pray, do not keep on babbling like pagans, for they think they will be heard because of their many words. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask Him. This, then, is how you should pray. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." Today, my message is pretty simple. It's on this question: will you or won't you? Will you or won't you? You guys all know how much I love a play on words, right? I'm going to play with some words today, but I am also going to get to the point. Jesus taught us to pray. One of the most powerful prayers, if not the most powerful prayer you can pray for your own life, is this: your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That word will is the Greek word thelema, which means what one wishes to be done or has determined shall be done. In our English vernacular, it's probably appropriate for us to call it our agenda. So if I could paraphrase it and make it a modern day prayer, it would be this prayer: Lord, let your agenda be done on earth as it is in heaven. Outwork your heart on earth as it is in heaven. I'm sure that's a powerful prayer to pray. Yeah. And today we're going to unpack that whole thing of what it means to pray that prayer, because I reckon that life has changed so much since this little old thing called the pandemic happened. How many of you remember the pandemic? Yeah. I'm sorry to bring it up again. But in 2020, our lives changed forever, did it not? Yeah. And, you know, I reckon also in a couple of years ago, maybe 18 months ago, when like the global state of emergency thing was lifted, life changed again for us. And it didn't necessarily go back to the way things were. It just went back to sort of the way things were, but like into a new iteration of it. And this is my take on it, that during the pandemic, life changed so much, so quickly for us. Some of you remember like movement restriction orders and lockdowns and quarantines and QR coding for close contacts and border closures and vaccination mandates. I was expecting some of y'all to throw shoes at me. The stuff, like, it felt for a time, did it not, that we lost control over our lives. And I don't know about you, but it felt like there was a bigger agenda that was imposing its agenda on our agenda. Do you know what I mean? It felt like there was a bigger will imposing its will on our will. And obviously people kept saying, oh, you still have a choice. Well, our choice was either follow that agenda or suffer the consequences. You know what I'm talking about? Right? And then when the pandemic restrictions lifted, I reckon there was a bit of a recoil. Here in Western countries, there was a bit of a recoil. We felt like we need to get control of our lives back. And so we did things and continued to do things like revenge travel. How many of y'all know like what revenge travel is? Like, revenge travel is like ordinary middle class people suddenly booking 6-7 week holidays to Europe. Since when did you have money to go to Europe for 6 or 7 weeks? You know what I'm talking about? Like with revenge travel, and it's just all the stuff that we wanted to do for 2 or 3 years that we couldn't do, couldn't outwork because there was this other agenda that was restricting us from it. And it felt like we were making up for lost time because we lost our agency. We lost our sense of control. We lost our sense of choice or our ability to do what we want to do. And in its purest form, what we, that desire to do innately what we want to do, it actually came from God. Because when God created us, remember, He created you as His image bearer. You're not a descendant of a monkey. Some of you don't agree with me. You can be a descendant of a monkey all you want, but I was created by God. Come on, somebody, right? And when He created you, He imprinted into you what was in Him, this innate ability, unique capacity to have a free will. However, to understand the doctrine of free will and come to a certain degree of understanding about why we do what we do and why we feel the way we do about some things, we need to understand that when God imprinted his image on us at the point of creation, his ability to have free will was also imprinted into Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. But this is what you need to know. At the point of creation, before sin entered into the world, our wills were aligned with his will. So at creation, the original intended design for God was that his will was done on earth as it is in heaven. You understand that? So in the book of Genesis before the fall, even though Adam and Eve had their own free will, it was completely aligned as an image bearer. It was a mirror image on earth of God's desire in heaven. Do you understand that? Yeah. Right? As soon as sin entered into the world, our humanity was filled with disobedience, and our wills then became corrupted and became at odds with the will of God ever since. Heaven's will and our will on earth became at enmity with each other. Do you understand that? I'm giving you big theology here. You follow me so far? Now it makes sense why Jesus comes. 2,000 years ago, he comes and restores back through this prayer, this very powerful line, not my will. Let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. It wasn't a prayer that was necessary before the fall, and it's not going to be a prayer that's necessary in eternity, but it sure is valid here on earth. Come on, somebody. Do you understand that? So I'm setting a framework for the theology that we're going to be working off today. Now, you got to understand that by what Jesus has done, our justification, our position, because of his finished work of Jesus, y'all learned that last week from Pastor James, that is not in question. You are already justified by God. You are seated in heavenly places. You are a Christian. Do you understand that? But by process of sanctification, how many of you guys know that our wills sometimes still are at odds with the will of God? Do you understand that? And so Jesus teaches the disciples, this is how you ought to pray. Make this your daily prayer. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. You follow me so far? All right, we're going to take another step forward. The Gospels were a unique time in human history. It was the only time in all of human history where the fully divine had human skin on. The Gospels recorded a time where Jesus walked the earth. In the account in Matthew chapter 26, just before Jesus went to the cross, Jesus actually shows us that his fully divine form was also fully human, and he was in this place where he was very close to being arrested, then being beaten, and he understood that the crucifixion was coming. He knew it. He knew that it was part of the Father's agenda to save the world from sin, reconcile a broken humanity back in a relationship with him, and he understood that his death via a horrible Roman crucifixion was the only way to redeem mankind. He knew that. It also had to be the most horrific way to die known to man at the time and even up until now, because only that kind of death would have been enough of a price to pay for all of humanity's sin. Do you understand that? Yeah. Right? So basic theology. And so the Bible says that this Jesus, who is the King of Kings, Lord of Lords, at this point close to his death in a garden called Gethsemane, showed his full humanity when he was actually fighting with the will of the Father. Do you understand that? So here's the fully divine with human skin on. He was stressed out at the thought of what was coming in the next couple of days. So we pick up this prayer, this conversation, this account in Gethsemane, and you can almost sense the stress, the tension, and the Bible says it caused him to sweat like drops of blood. In Matthew 26, verse 36 says this, "Then Jesus came with them to a place called Gethsemane and said to his disciples, 'Sit here while I go and pray over there.' And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and he began to be sorrowful and deeply distressed." Do you understand that sorrow and distress is a very human emotion? "Then he said to them, 'My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. In other words, I am scared to death here. Stay here and watch with me. He went a little farther and fell on his face, and he prayed this prayer, saying, "Oh, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." See the humanity in Jesus? "Nevertheless, not my agenda, but your agenda. Can I suggest to you today that that first Gethsemane moment set the way? It was the forerunner for us, because every day that we are here on earth following Jesus in this broken world, it is the same prayer we all ought to pray. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours. Nevertheless, not my agenda, but your agenda. Do you understand that for that moment in time, Jesus had, he actually had free will. He could have chosen to walk away from the Father's divine plan to redeem the entire world of sin through his sacrifice. He had the right to do it. How do we know that? He told us in John 10, verse 7, "Therefore my Father loves me because I lay down my life that I may take it again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of myself," voluntarily. In other words, I have power to lay it down and I have power to take it again. This command I have received from my Father. In other words, what Jesus is saying, I have free will. I can walk and work with my own agenda here. No one is asking me to lay my life down. I can lay it down. I can take it up again. I can choose whether I want to do it or not do it. But in this moment, in Matthew chapter 26, there was a wrestle between Jesus' agenda and the Father's agenda that set the scene so that all of humanity that say yes to Jesus from that moment on can pray that same prayer: not my will be done, but yours be done. Not my agenda be outworked, but your agenda be outworked. So for us, Gethsemane needs to be our daily reality. What does that look like? It means we create a posture, a default prayer posture. Lord, not my will be done, but yours be done in my marriage. Lord, not my will be done, but yours be done in how I raise my kids. Lord, not my will be done, but your will be done in how I deal with my finances. Lord, not my agenda, but your agenda in how I deal with my body. Lord, not, come on, somebody. You can see how, as we're walking out our salvation with fear and trembling, there's going to be junctures and seasons in our lives where what we want to do is not the same as what God wants to do. What we will is not the same as what God wills. What our agenda is, our thelema, is different to God's thelema. That's why it's such a powerful prayer that Jesus says, if you're going to pray, pray this every day. Let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And unless we all admit that in every season of our lives, possibly even every day of our lives, we have different moments to different seasons where what we want to do is not the same as what God through his word wants to do, we'll never pray that prayer. We will never have the conviction of it. Lord, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. We won't have any conviction to pray that, because what we really mean is, let my will be done on earth and you come and bless it. Let my agenda be outworked, and I hope and pray that you'll bless it, because I've just lodged in a prayer request card. And no wonder so many of us don't experience a heaven on earth. We live a hell on earth because we don't want to submit our agenda to his agenda, our will to his will. We don't want to pray, Lord, let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. I believe that God is restoring back in the Western church a desire to pray this prayer, this holy Lord's prayer once again. Not my will be done, but your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Your will is best positioned in a place of surrender. It's a restoring back to God's original intended design at creation, where Adam and Eve didn't have to pray, your will be done on earth, not my will, but your will. They didn't have to pray those prayers because God's will was in their will and their will was in God's will. But when they disobeyed and sin corrupted their will, there was a call back for all of humanity to pray this prayer: your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. I don't know whether you realize it or not, but every day you are alive, you're going to have Gethsemane moments. Every day that you're alive, you're going to have Gethsemane moments where you're going to be chaffed, having to choose between what you want to do and what you know God wants you to do. How many ever had that moment where you had to choose? Four of you. The rest of you guys completely aligned all of the time with God. Seriously, like your will wants to react a certain way, but you know you got to submit that response or that reaction to the will of God, and how, because you know that's not how Jesus would react. Your will wants to have that conversation that makes you look really good at work, but then the other person look really bad, but you know that's not going to glorify God or bring heaven on earth. Come on, somebody. Your will wants to be doing what feels good, but it's not necessarily what is good. Right? You see how powerful this application of this Gethsemane moment, your will, not my will be done thing, actually is. I actually had a perfect opportunity this week to apply my own Gethsemane moment at the car park of IGA on Tuesday night. I was on the way home because I was cooking dinner that night, so I rushed into IGA, my local IGA, and the car park was pretty empty. It was maybe 20% full. So I like, you know, as I do, Asian driver style, I too fast, too furious into my bay. Parked it, want to rush out, get my meat and my veggies and my ingredients, right? As I got out of the car, I heard a voice from the other side of the car park. Like, there's three empty bays on either side of my car bay. Someone yells out, it was a tradie in a ute, "Oi, shocking parking, mate, straighten your car up." I looked at my car and, like, granted, I had like one tire 2 inches on the white line. So slightly at an angle, right? I was in a rush. I looked at the car park is 20% full. I wanted to go up there and straighten his teeth out. That's what I wanted. That was my will. Then I looked at my shirt, and I was actually wearing the Glorify shirt. So yeah, you're right, mate. It's a bit crooked, isn't it? I'll straighten it for you. And that's how it ended up. Glorify your name. I was pretty ticked off, but I realized very quickly that it was a Gethsemane moment for me. That it's not okay to just behave all Christian at 9:30 on a Sunday morning, but not at 6:30 on a Tuesday night. Do you understand what I'm talking about? But we have there's moments, and it's just an example. It was an inconsequential moment. But you have Gethsemane moments every day of your life, every season of your life, every year of your life. Think about the big agendas of your life. Can I ask you this question today? Are you raising your kids your way, or are you raising them God's way? Are you pursuing your career your way, or are you pursuing it God's way? Are you spending your money your way, or are you stewarding it God's way? Come on. Are you engaging in relationships according to your own feelings or according to God's word? Are you living your life doing what you want to do, or are you living it according to what God has called you to do? Come on, church. Right? And every day we have a choice. We are at our Gethsemane moments, even daily. We just don't realize it. That's why the Bible is full of expressions that speak to free will beings like us. I have set before you life and death. Choose life. You have a free will, but align it with God. Yeah. Makes sense to you? Even Paul says this, Romans 7 verse 14, "For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. For what I am doing, I do not understand. For what I will to do, that I do not practice. But what I hate, that I do. If then I do what I will not to do, I agree with the law that it is good. But now it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells in me. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, nothing good dwells, for to will is present with me, but how to perform what is good, I do not find. For the good that I will to do, I do not do, but the evil I will not to do, that I practice. Now if I do what I will not to do, it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells in me." The donut I don't want to eat, I eat. And the kale I should be eating, I don't eat. The podcast I should be listening to that'll feed my soul, I don't listen to. But that crass music that I boogie onto, I shouldn't be listening to, I listen to. You follow me so far?
Yeah.
At every juncture in our lives, we're faced with Gethsemane moments. Yeah. And then Paul goes on to finish it by this. "Oh, wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death?" Verse 25, that's where the hope comes in. "I thank God through Jesus Christ." Paul was essentially saying this: when sin came into the world, our wills became corrupted. And if you just do what you will to do, Paul actually calls it carnality. He uses a stronger word, he calls it evil. But left to our own devices, we are all narcissistic, self-seeking. Come on, somebody. Like, selfish. We only look after ourselves. We are mean. Come on. You don't have to teach your toddlers to be irrational, crazy, selfish. Come on. Right? So if I could put it to you this way, Jesus came to save us from our own wills. He came to save us from the will that will do what we shouldn't do and the will that won't do what we should do. Come on, somebody. And so my prayer for us today is that as we understand just what our own agendas, our own thelemas are capable of, we would become people again, even here in the West, with all our choices, all our resources, all our information, all our wealth, all of the things that give us more opportunities to do all of the things we want to do, we become the church that understands, nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. And we can truly then pray the Lord's Prayer, Lord, let your will be done on earth, in this earthly realm, in my life, as it is in heaven. Can we give God a big shout of praise today? You follow me so far? All right, we're going to do a bit of Bible opening up today. Is that okay? Right? So the picture of our sinful will coming under the blood of Jesus, being brought to submission under the lordship of Christ, that was all actually played out right throughout the Old Testament. We see this in different stories and metaphors and pictures of accounts that were recorded in the Old Testament. I'm going to take you to one such example in 1 Samuel chapter 6. It was a time where the presence of God, or the very manifest presence of God, was actually in a movable, confined structure called the ark. You follow me so far? You know a bit of your Old Testament history? Yep. It's in something called an ark. It was transportable, and it was represented all that Israel worshipped in terms of Jehovah. It was in this ark. 1 Samuel chapter 6 accounts for a battle skirmish between the Israelites and the Philistines. And in that particular battle, the Philistines actually won, and they kidnapped the ark. That's just a modern way to say it. They took it, and they brought it back to the Philistine region or the area, and to dishonor the ark, they actually placed it in front of Dagon, their god. That's how dishonoring they were of this presence of God. So because they did that, God then allowed the Philistines to suffer some plagues. There was mice and rats that overran the entire countryside, devouring all their crops, and the people started to develop tumors. Some of you are going, where is PK going with this? I'm going somewhere with this, okay? And so the Philistine leaders then consulted their diviners and their philosophers and said, what should we do? We're all suffering from these plagues. Maybe it's because we kidnapped and captured the ark and we dishonored it by putting it next to the statue of Dagon. What should we do? So the diviners and the philosophers said this, their priests essentially said this, well, it really isn't good what we've done to the God of Israel and what represents their presence of God for them. I think we should send it back to Israel. But we're going to also give them like a guilt offering. So we're gonna ring our goldsmiths and ask them to make some tumors and rats and mice out of gold, put it in a box next to the ark, and then we're also going to get two cows that have just recently gave birth to calves, and we're actually going to put a yoke on them and send them on their way to take the ark back to Israel. Some of you guys are going, where is he going with this? Let me take you somewhere good today. 1 Samuel chapter 6, verse 10. Let's read this. Then the men did so. This is the Philistines. They took two milk cows and hitched them to the cart and shut up their calves at home. And they set the ark of the Lord on the cart and the chests with the gold rats and the images of their tumors. Ew. Then the cows headed straight for the road to Beth Shemesh, which is the region in Israel, and went along the highway, lowing as they went, and did not turn aside to the right hand or the left. And the lords of the Philistines went after them to the border of Beth Shemesh. Now, the people of Beth Shemesh were reaping their wheat harvest in the valley. So this is the Israelites now. And they lifted their eyes and saw the ark and rejoiced to see it. Let me just exegete this text for you. Some of you are getting real confused. Stay with me. Switch your brains on. You guys still there?
Yeah.
All right. So what's happening here, all right, is that there... The ark was in Philistine territory, right? So the presence of God, very strong. It's represented in that ark. They sent that ark and yoked two milking cows. Imagine if I'm a cow. Two milking cows, and they shut their calves up in a house. Follow me so far? They wanted to know also whether this ark was really the presence of God, right? And so they hitched the cart holding the ark and the box with tumors and golden mice in it, and they slapped the rump of these cows that had never been yoked together. The whole idea is that the maternal instinct of the cow would be to throw off the yoke, follow its own will or its own agenda, and turn back to the bleating or the young mooing of their calves because of the maternal instinct. Do you understand that?
Yeah.
Right? But they slapped the rump of the cows, and the Bible tells us that they walked all the way down the road to Beth-Shemesh, lowing, bellowing in agony as all of their maternal instincts were fighting against the gravitational pull of the presence of God to return the ark back into Israel territory. It was a picture of a time that will come one day where all of humanity through Jesus Christ may be going through our Gethsemane moments. Come on, somebody. Where we are having to fight between the pull of our own will versus the pull of the presence of God. And I'm here to tell you today that through Jesus Christ, we get to put on Jesus every day so that the gravitational pull of walking in the will of God becomes far greater than the pull of doing life our way. Now it makes sense. Now it makes sense why the Bible tells us to put on Christ. Paul reminds us that for as long as we're left unyoked, not putting on Jesus, Paul reminds us that our wills are carnal. We want to do things that naturally aren't great for us. It feels good in the moment, but it ain't always good for us. And the Bible reminds, now it makes sense now why Jesus says in Matthew 11 verse 30, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Shannon preached on this a few weeks ago from the angle of rest. I want to add another layer to you today to remind you that there is actually an invitation that when you put the yoke on of Jesus, your will becomes aligned with His, and that is where true rest actually comes in. It's stressful trying to do life on your own. It's stressful trying to fight the will of God for your life. Your will is at its best when it is restored back to the original intended moment where Adam and Eve walked in the cool of the day, completely naked, not even stressed about a single thing. Why? Because heaven was already on earth. Because of our sin, we live a hell on earth. And Jesus, through the model prayer, was restoring us back to the one truth, that your will be done on earth as it is in heaven through the cross. Now, in Matthew 16, verse 24, Jesus also said this second conversation. Makes sense. If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. This passage is often preached as a real heavy burden, a real challenging verse. You need to take up your cross and deny yourself. It's actually an invitation to just surrender your will to His. Makes sense to you? Right? Because my life is most miserable when I try and live it my way. That's when the stress and the anxiety and the worry and the discontentment comes. But when I take up my cross or His yoke and put on Christ, everything falls back into alignment. That expression, take up your cross, that Jesus says in Matthew 16, is seen everywhere in the Old Testament, wherever the ark was moved. Joshua 3 verse 6, then Joshua spoke to the priest saying, take up the Ark of the Covenant and cross over before the people. You guys aren't seeing this word picture here. Come on, somebody. In the Old Testament, what they had was the Ark. It was the presence of God. And wherever they went with the presence of God, wherever they followed the presence of God, then the nation would be at rest. Come on, somebody. The nation would be aligned with God. And so when they moved into the promised land, the call was to take up the ark. Now through Jesus Christ, the call is not to take up a movable structure called the ark anymore. We're called to take up the cross, to take on His easy yoke, to surrender. Now, as we take this posture, I love this, Shannon, because you got like the yoke on both sides, but like if you flip it, that becomes a cross. Now, this is how every Christian should walk around doing life. Now we understand, oh, your yoke is easy. Your burden is light. Now as I take up the cross and now as I deny my will, my agenda, I'm being restored back to God's original intended design. Come on, somebody. There is something that we have to come back to today, because I think we try and do our own Christian lives too much on our own terms, and we keep asking God to bless it, and we wonder why God refuses to change His will to our will. I'm here to suggest to you today that what started in a garden where sin corrupted the will ended in a second garden where Jesus prayed, not my will, but yours be done. What started in Eden, which is my life, my body, my choices, my agenda, finished in Gethsemane. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. Do I have a church today that understands where I'm going with this? We now are called to live post-Gethsemane. We're called to live in a new place of surrender that is not a heavy burden, that is not legalistic, that is not religious, but incredibly freeing. The yoke is easy through Jesus. The cross that we carry is not a difficult cross. It's a cross that He already carried for us. Come on, somebody. All that He's asking us to do is to simply say, Jesus, not my will be done, but yours be done. Today in the 21st century, we have more means to live for ourselves than ever before. More choices, more things to do, places to go, money to spend. And yet, never in a time in human history have we had higher suicide rates. Self-harm is an epidemic. Confusion and dysphoria, depression and anxiety are at epidemic levels. If doing your own thing is so good, then why is that the case? If it's so wonderful just to go live you do you is so good, then why is the world in such utter chaos? Can I suggest to you today that we weren't actually called to you do you? We were called to you do Jesus. Because who you surrender your will to is who you partner your life with. Do you know that Jesus was asked to surrender His free will in the wilderness? You can choose to do whatever you want, Jesus, Satan says to Jesus. But if you can, and you should, turn those stones to bread, because I know you're hungry. I know you want to eat it. When you do, you can worship me. Throw yourself off and the angels will catch you. Show me how awesome you are if you are the Son of God. Then when you do, you can come and worship me. Jesus, in that moment, had his first Gethsemane moment before Gethsemane. Come on, you're following me so far. Yes. Choosing between the two. Musicians, you can join me. My prayer for us is that in the seasons that are to come, as we start to look at the end of this year and in the planning of 2025, how many of you already started to look at 2025? Yeah, things you want to do, the holidays you want to book, and all the stuff you want to do with your kids. I'm setting you up and getting in before the real planning comes. Plan like this. Plan like this. Think about 2025 like this. Think about the next steps for your family like this. Think about the next steps in your career like this. Think about which school your kids are going to go to like this. Think about whether they should engage in youth ministry or not. Do it like this. Think about whether you should go to Connect after 5 years being in this church. Think about it like this. Think about all of the things that you're thinking about that you want to do. Do it with this posture. Nevertheless, not my will be done, but yours. Can we give God a big shout of praise today? Why don't you stand at your feet right across this room?
Thanks for listening to the Nations Church podcast. For more info, please visit nationschurch.com.